What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I think we're just going to get right into the case today, right? I don't think there's any big...
No, nothing.
I mean, there's always true crime updates, but yeah. I don't think there's anything that we've really been following. So
yeah,
we'll just go ahead and get into today's case. And today we are going to be talking about an Australian case that was suggested by one of our listeners named Chloe. So thank you, Chloe, for the suggestion.
Yeah, thanks.
Today we will be discussing the case of Lynette Dawson. So 16-year-old Lynette Sims was attending a high school function in 1965 when she met a boy named Chris Dawson. And the two pretty quickly began dating, and 5 years later, they got married at St. Jude's Church, Randwick, in Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
And before they started having kids, Chris was a rugby player, so they lived a pretty comfortable life, it yeah. seems like, and they did go on to have two children. So both Chris and his identical twin brother, Paul, played professionally for the Newton Jets Rugby Club and the New South Wales Championship Rugby Club.
Wow.
So they played from 1972 to 1976, and it seems like they were pretty good players. I saw that they were in some advertisements. They were in an ABC documentary with their wives. This was called Checkerboard, and they discussed how their close bond affected their lives, and it seemed like they were, like, pretty popular and successful at rugby.
Okay, that's cool.
When their professional rugby careers ended, they began working as physical education teachers in high schools. So I'm pretty sure Paul did this first when they stopped playing rugby, and then Chris soon followed.
Did they just, like, age out, you know, for lack of
I
better
so,
terminology?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what it seems like. It didn't seem like anything major happened that led to them, like, stopping to play. It kind of just seemed like, you know, their career was done.
Okay.
Lynette worked as a nurse and childcare worker, and she was a mom to the couple's two young children. In the late 1970s, after retiring from playing rugby, Chris Dawson was working as a phys ed teacher at Cromer High School. So it was later discovered that both Chris and his brother Paul engaged in illicit sexual behavior with female students at
no.
their schools.
Come on, dude. Both of them?
Yeah, both.
Okay, of them. They took the whole twin thing a little too serious.
I know, right? They literally did everything the same, including
sexually assaulting. Well, we don't know if it's assaulting necessarily, but still, they're minors, so there's not really consent, you know?
Exactly. At his school, Chris is alleged to be one of six male teachers who preyed on students.
Wow, six. That's insane. Yeah.
In 1981, he allegedly groomed and slept with a student at Cromer High School named Joanne Curtis. So 16-year-old Joanne was a student of Chris's, and she also worked as a babysitter for the Dawson's children.
Oh.
And we will talk a little bit more about this later and kind of how this all came about. But for now, that's what you need to know.
Okay.
You also need to know that Joanne had a bit of a rough family life with a, quote, violent, aggressive, and controlling stepfather. Mm. So it's believed that she turned to Chris as, like, a teacher for support. They ended up getting closer, and he ended up inviting her to move into their household, and she moved in temporarily in late 1981.
That's so sad because she obviously was looking for that fatherly
yeah.
influence, and he completely took advantage of her, and
yeah,
it's so gross.
I know. So that's what was going on in the household. And on January 8th, 1982, 33-year-old Lynette spoke to her mother on the phone. They were planning to meet the next day at the Northbridge Baths, which is like a local beach, and they were going to hang out with other members of the family. But when the next day came, Lynette never arrived.
Oh, no.
In fact, Lynette was not even seen leaving for the beach that morning. She wasn't answering the phone, and no one had seen or heard from her all day.
Okay.
But Chris didn't report his wife missing right away. So he claimed that they had been having marital problems and that day they had gotten in a fight over Lynette's spending. So he said that she had left the home and he wasn't really concerned about her well-being because she willingly left.
Right.
But just 2 days later, on January 10th, 1982, that Cromer High School student, Joanne Curtis, permanently moved into the Dawson's household.
And how old is this girl?
I believe at this point she was 17.
And was her mom around? Like, no one's protesting this?
So she had a very rough family life.
Right.
And it seems like maybe her parents weren't paying the closest attention.
They just didn't care.
Or she was really lying to them. Like, we don't know.
Oh, true.
The other thing is, when I was, and maybe any of our, like, Australian listeners that might know could let us know, but when I was doing research into this, there was a charge that we'll talk about later for basically having sexual relations with a minor, but it was with someone between ages like 10 to 16. So I'm wondering if 17 is kind of considered more of an adult.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's typically 18. So I think at this point she was 17. So if that's the case,
so
there might not be much they can do.
Fun fact, in the state of South Carolina, you're technically considered an adult at the age of 17. So, but it's like, it's very, there's a lot of gray as to what that includes. But I'm pretty sure, like, consent is under that adulthood
17.
Type.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Classification. Yeah, I know. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could talk about that for a whole podcast
episode,
but we won't go any further on that. But yeah, it kind of seems like either people in her life weren't paying attention or she was, I don't want to say that for sure because there's none of the definitive.
Yeah,
none of the sources said anything like about that for sure and about like her parents and other than just that she had a bit of a rough family life. So it's hard to say.
Okay.
So Chris did not report Lynette missing until February 18th, which was 6 weeks after she disappeared.
I wonder why.
And it kind of seemed like at first the public and like police were sympathetic to him because his wife was missing.
Right.
But then he kind of kept saying, well, she left willingly. And then maybe there was kind of some pressure on him to look like he was concerned. That's just my opinion, but it kind of seems like that was kind of what was going on.
Okay.
Now, in an interview with police, Chris suggested that Lynette had joined a religious organization. So now not only is he saying she left willingly, but he's now saying she went on and joined like this organization.
Like a cult or something.
And, yeah, exactly.
Right. Not that all religious organizations are cults, but you know.
Yeah. That's what they tend to imply when they say things like
that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And something like this had actually happened in Chris's extended family before. So his older brother had heard the story of his mother-in-law going missing for several years in the late 1950s. So she was missing for years, and then it was later discovered that she had left her husband and three children to start a new life in New Zealand.
Okay.
So while this seems like something that you would never think would happen, it definitely does. Mm-hmm. And Chris kind of had a perfect story to explain a time that it did.
Right. He had this, all the details. He could have just replaced his wife's name
with
this person. Yeah.
Exactly. But Lynette was never seen or heard from again.
No.
So immediate searches for Lynette were done, but there was absolutely no evidence of her whereabouts. Chris continued to claim that she left on her own accord, and he always referred to her in the present tense, you know, never saying she used to be. He was always like, oh, she is. He would say, I hope that she's living happily somewhere. I hope she's happy wherever she is, that kind of thing.
So he was probably just conscious of making sure to say that. Yeah,
exactly. Her family weren't convinced, but unfortunately, there was no evidence to prove otherwise, and so the investigation into her disappearance pretty much went cold.
Dang.
Chris ended up filing for divorce from Lynette, and when that finalized in 1983, just the year after she went missing, he ended up getting engaged to that high school student, Joanne Curtis.
I was waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. And they got married in 1984 and eventually had a child together.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, after the New South Wales police investigation went cold, several smaller investigations started to pop up. In 1999, NSW police officer Damien Loon was assigned to the case, and with fresh eyes, he started conducting several interviews with Joanne Curtis, her parents, and Lynette's family and friends. Now, it should be noted that Chris and Joanne, the high school student, ended up getting divorced in 1990. So
shocking.
I know. But that means by this point in 1999, they had been divorced. So Whatever this thing that was happening between them was over at this point.
Okay.
Now, these interviews led to a phone tap being improved for both Chris and his brother Paul's phones. We don't know what led to that phone tap, like what exactly was said in the interviews, but they were able to tap their phones. But this ultimately led nowhere.
Because chances are, if he did something, his brother was either involved or knew about it.
Yeah, that definitely seemed to be what they thought. Because of how close they
are. Yeah.
But also, this was, 16 years after Lynette disappeared? So,
true. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
In 2000, the Dawson's yard was dug up, and they did discover a pink cardigan and a wrapper dated 1981, but they were unable to link anything directly to Lynette's disappearance.
That's really odd, though. A cardigan?
Mm-hmm.
Buried? That's really odd. Mm-hmm.
Now, the NSW state coroner conducted two separate coronial inquiries into Lynette's disappearance. The first was in 2001, and Deputy State Coroner Jan Stevenson concluded that Lynette had been murdered by someone she knew. Mm-hmm. So the coroner was strongly suggesting that Chris was involved and did recommend for charges to be prosecuted, but at the time, the NSW Director of Public Prosecutions, whose name was Nicholas Cowdery, concluded that there was insufficient evidence to get a criminal conviction. So they were basically like, okay, we maybe see it, but there's just not enough evidence, so we can't charge
him. We're not going to pursue it, yeah.
The second inquest was held in 2003, and in February of that year, the inquest concluded once again that Chris should be charged with Lynette's murder. But once again, Cowdery refused to charge him because of the lack of evidence. And at this point, no body has been found. There really is no physical evidence at all. Everything is pretty much circumstantial.
Okay.
So despite Nicholas Cowdery, the director of public prosecutions, continuing to deny any charges being filed against Chris, investigators continued to search for evidence for the next almost 15 years.
Wow.
In 2015, the case was reopened. So I feel like we've talked about this before. In the U.S., when a case is like a cold case doesn't get reopened because it just never gets closed.
Right.
This case was never closed either, but it was basically like, they're like, we're going to reinvestigate this.
Okay.
And this time, instead of investigating it as a missing persons case, they were going to be investigating it as a murder.
Okay.
So that investigation went heavy for the next 3 years. And finally, in April 2018, the NSW police once again requested for their evidence to be reviewed. And this time, it seemed like there was going to be enough evidence.
Oh.
In May 2018, an investigative journalist named Hedley Thomas debuted a podcast called The Teacher's Pet. As part of this podcast, Thomas investigated all the information that had been discovered up to that point, and he was able to piece together a story of basically Chris Dawson killing his wife because he wanted to be with this young student.
Right.
Now, as part of the investigation he did for the podcast, Thomas interviewed witnesses that never spoke to police, that police basically overlooked. And this story that he was putting together had never really been shared publicly. So this brought a lot of public attention back to this now, at this point, decades old cold case. And it brought a lot of criticism about how the case was initially handled, and it actually led to the police commissioner issuing an apology for the mishandling of the initial investigation.
Okay.
So they already were kind of like looking, you know, they had been doing this new investigation since 2015, but this podcast brought a lot of public attention and a lot more just knowledge to the case, more information. And it kind of reminds me of the Kristen Smart case and the podcast.
Right.
Where it's like they were still investigating, but the podcast did interviews with people that maybe hadn't been interviewed or hadn't been interviewed in years and things like that. And it just brought a lot more up that could eventually be led to the police doing a more in-depth investigation.
Okay.
So then in December 2018, Chris Dawson was arrested in Queensland. He was extradited to New South Wales, where he was charged with the murder of his now ex-wife, Lynette. He was granted bail, so he was able to leave jail, but his trial was pending.
Okay.
And then in June 2019, he entered a plea of not guilty. And in February 2020, he was committed to stand trial for the murder of Lynette.
And this is all without a body.
All without a body.
Okay.
So, as I mentioned earlier about the, you know, sexual relations charge, he was also charged with having sexual relations with a girl between the ages of 10 and 17. And so this was related to his relationship with Joanne Curtis when she was still a high school student. And he was charged with murder.
Wow.
Now, over the next year, Chris Dawson applied for a stay of prosecution, citing that there had been an inordinate delay in prosecuting him. So if you're like me and you don't really understand what this means, he's basically trying to say that because it's been so long, he shouldn't be prosecuted.
Which is like so stupid, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, I guess, well, I don't know, not for murder. Well, at least in the U.S., there's not a statute of limitations for murder, but there should not be. I mean.
No. It doesn't matter how long ago it was.
Yeah. Fuck off, Chris. God.
Now, he also claimed that members of a jury could have prejudged his guilt because of the widespread publicity about the case. So that is fair.
Okay. Like, I get that. Yeah, I get that.
And a judge did grant a temporary stay to, quote, allow publicity to fade from jurors' minds. So the judge was like, okay, you can have a temporary stay, but we're not granting you a permanent stay.
No.
Like, you're being charged for this.
Yeah. Like, sorry you probably murdered your wife or had something to do with it and people know about it and now you're scared that they're gonna crucify you because of it, like.
Exactly. No. So he kept like appealing to try to get a permanent stay, and this was denied by both the NSW Supreme Court and the Court of Criminal Appeal.
Good.
He continued to try to fight this, but in April 2022, so this year,
wow,
40 years after Lynette's disappearance and presumed murder, Chris Dawson was finally denied special leave to appeal to the High Court of Australia. So they were basically like, enough, you don't get to appeal anymore, your stay isn't going to be granted, you are going to trial.
Okay.
In May 2022, Justice Robert Beach Jones granted Chris Dawson's application for a judge-alone trial. So Chris was continuing to argue that, quote, extensive pretrial publicity meant a jury was unsuitable in his case. So he was granted to have a trial only be heard by a judge, not a jury trial.
Okay. I mean, fair.
And the trial before Justice Ian Harrison began on May 9th, 2022. The prosecution's case was pretty much all based on circumstantial evidence, alleging that Chris murdered his wife with the motive of being able to marry Joanne Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Chris's defense acknowledged that, quote, Dawson may have failed his wife, but that she left and abandoned the family of her own accord. So the defense was trying to play up the story that Lynette had abandoned her family to go start a new life. They even brought in several witnesses that claimed to have spotted Lynette since her disappearance.
But they had never come forward prior to this?
Mm-hmm.
Convenient.
Yeah. Chris Dawson did not testify at his trial.
Okay.
The trial lasted until July 11th, and on August 30th, 2022, just a couple months ago, Justice Harrison came back with his verdict.
Okay.
Chris Dawson was found guilty of the murder of Lynette Dawson.
Wow. That's insane.
I know. And Justice Harrison basically found that the prosecution's time frame was accurate. And now I'm going to kind of go through what happened,
okay,
according to the prosecution, that the judge basically found accurate. Now, according to Joanne Curtis's testimony, in 1980, she began babysitting for the Dawson family. She said that Chris was giving her driving lessons, and one day while they were in the car, he kissed her and confessed his love for her. I know. After this, they began regularly having intercourse in his car, and she was only 16 years old.
Oh my gosh.
When her home situation became even worse later that year, she moved in with the Dawsons, and she alleged that at that point, they would have intercourse in the house while Lynette was in the shower or after she went to bed.
Wow. So she was there. Ew. Have some fucking respect, dude. Her and him. I mean, I get it. She was a minor. And like, again, we can't say, you know, if she was being groomed or whatever. But still, like, you're in this woman's house. She's extended her home to you. And just so gross on both their accounts.
Yeah. So around December 22nd, 1981, Chris Dawson and Joanne Curtis traveled to Queensland to attempt to start a new life. But reportedly, Joanne missed her family, and so they returned.
Okay.
When they did return, Joanne wanted to end the relationship, but Chris wouldn't let that happen. The couple ended up spending Christmas Day and New Year's Eve together. And then between January 1st and 2nd, 1981, Joanne, quote, traveled north to Southwest Rocks, where she camped with her sisters and friends. She contacted Dawson every day via a reverse charge call from a payphone, as Dawson had told her to. So I definitely think she was being groomed and coerced and forced into this.
Yeah.
I really don't think that
she had anything to do with it. Yeah. It doesn't seem that way.
And even their entire relationship, like them sleeping together in the house when Lynette was there, like, I think he was just forcing her to do all of that.
Yeah. And she was probably desperate because she had nowhere else to go, you know?
Yeah, exactly. She had a awful home life. She was terrified of her stepfather. And she was only 17 years old. Like, where? What is she going to do? Where is she going to go? You know, that's terrifying. So, I definitely think that she was being groomed.
Yeah.
It is believed that while she was gone, Chris Dawson murdered his wife on or around January 8th. Between January 10th and 12th, Chris picked Joanne up from this camping trip and brought her back to Sydney, allegedly telling her, quote, Lynn's gone. She's not coming back. Come back to Sydney and help look after the kids and live with me.
Ew.
Yeah. This isn't, that quote isn't fully confirmed. I believe that came from Joanne's testimony.
Okay. But
as you'll see, the judge basically found her testimony to be truthful. So.
Right.
So in his decision, Justice Harrison concluded that Chris had lied a number of times during the trial or during his police interviews and stuff like that.
Okay.
Including about his relationship with Joanne Curtis, about his desire to continue a relationship with his wife. So he had said, like, I want her to come back. I want, you know, to be with her. And the judge was like, no, you didn't.
He knew all the right things to say for sure.
Yeah. And the judge found that he lied about receiving phone calls from Lynette after she disappeared. Justice Harrison believed that the sightings of Lynette were, quote, wholly unreliable.
Right.
He found that there was a, quote, most compelling body of evidence to reject the hypothesis that Lynette Dawson abandoned her family. She loved her children, was mentally stable, and had not taken any personal belongings with her. So there was no evidence that she had left voluntarily.
Right.
He found beyond a reasonable doubt that Lynette had died as a result of a conscious and voluntary act by Chris Dawson. So now 74 years old, Chris Dawson continues to deny any involvement in Lynette's disappearance or murder.
Okay.
But he will likely be spending the rest of his life in prison. He is currently awaiting sentencing. He is in jail because the judge denied his application for bail after his conviction. He tried to apply for bail while he was awaiting his sentencing after being convicted of murder. Like, no.
He was going to try to probably flee the country.
Yeah, exactly. He reportedly has had to move prisons after facing death threats. Damn. So he's not well liked.
Yeah.
According to everything I could find, Chris Dawson's sentencing hearing is scheduled to take place this Friday, November 11th.
Wow.
So we will definitely update you when that happens because, you know, he's already been convicted, but this is sentencing.
Right.
But he will likely be spending, he's 74. He'll likely be spending the rest of his life in prison.
Yeah.
After the verdict against Chris, Lynette's brother, Greg Sims, said, quote, "This verdict is for Lynn. Today, her name has been cleared. She loved her family and would have never left them of her own accord. Right. Instead, her trust was betrayed by a man she loved."
Man, that's so sad.
I know. Lynette was senselessly murdered by a selfish husband, and she is a victim here. And I'm just so glad that despite it being so many years later, she finally has justice.
And hopefully, you know, deathbed confession type, maybe they can find, you know, where she is and actually lay her to rest.
Yeah, because her family has said that, or they've asked Chris to reveal where her body is and basically said, like, let us bring her home. But Chris is continuing to say he's innocent. Yeah. So he's not going to say anything. Hopefully some sort of deathbed confession, maybe. But it seems like right now he's not going to say anything. And, you know, while so many people did believe that he was involved, there's also a lot of people who probably believe that she just left her family. And it's just so frustrating that that was what was out there for so long, because she didn't. She wouldn't
Where
have
is
done
she?
That.
Somebody would have seen her by now.
Exactly.
I mean, those kind of claims always strike me, because I'm like, okay, if they did leave, they're out living some other life somewhere. Somebody has had to have seen them, you know, like,
yeah,
even if they dye their hair or change their appearance to some degree. I mean, they still look like, unless she went to some extreme of plastic surgery or something, but chances are that's not going to happen. So how come no one has spotted her? Doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. And even Chris's brother's mother-in-law was eventually spotted in New Zealand. So, like, and just the fact that she didn't bring any personal belongings, she had young children, that by all accounts she was a loving mother, like, there was just no evidence whatsoever to point to her leaving willingly. I also believe that Joanne Curtis was a victim here. As I said briefly, as I briefly mentioned, the judge determined that her testimony was truthful and reliable. And from everything she said, it sounds like she was more or less coerced into a relationship after Lynette went missing. And I truly think that before Lynette went missing, she was terrified and, like you said, was looking for a father figure, was looking for somebody to help protect her. And he groomed her and to Good get advantage. What he wanted. Because of their divorce in 1990, Chris's defense tried to use this as, like, you know, proof that Joanne was lying. Basically say, like, oh, she doesn't like him anymore, so everything she's saying is a lie.
Yeah.
But the judge was like, nope, everything she said is truthful. And, you know, I truly do believe she's a victim as well.
Yeah.
Chris Dawson's lawyer has said that he is still planning to appeal the verdict against him. And as I mentioned, Lynette's family is still asking Chris to tell them where her body is.
Yeah.
But as of now, it doesn't seem like he's going to talk. As I mentioned, we'll keep you guys updated whenever the sentencing comes out.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think he's going to be spending the rest of his life in prison. I think, you know, from everything I read about the trial and the judge's decision, it seemed like the judge was really, like, not taking any of his bullshit and was like, no, you got it. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the case of the disappearance and murder of Lynette Dawson. it's just so heartbreaking. A mother taken from her family for absolutely no reason.
For sex, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, disgusting. That's pretty much what it was. Because, I mean... Yeah,
he could have just...
He didn't need someone to take care of his children. He had their mother, you know? So he just... Yeah, why not just divorce her? Sure, you might have to pay alimony, child support. That's the price you pay for being a skeeze. So...
Yeah, and it's so frustrating that he literally got to live for 40 years freely.
Yeah.
And, like, yes, he'll spend the rest of his life in prison, but, like, how much longer
is he really gonna live? His life is almost over anyway.
Yeah, it's so frustrating.
I mean, you know, he's, what you said, 74?
74, yeah.
He might have a good 10, 20, maybe 20 years, but probably not. I mean, I don't know his health, but, you know.
Yeah. No, he got to live the majority of his life free after doing this. And that's just terrible because she didn't get to do that.
No.
But, yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. I will be posting pictures of the beautiful Lynette. There's one adorable picture of her with her like 5-month-old baby, and it's just so sweet. She seemed like an amazing mother and an amazing person. Yeah. So I'll be sharing those pictures on our Instagram and Facebook, so be sure to go check those out. And we will be back Thursday with a new episode. So until then, keep it human.
Bye.